WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number three of the program here on Wednesday morning. Wet Wednesday, still kind of damp and misty out there, but it should clear up in time for the Raise the Roof party later tonight at Cisco Brewers. Zeitarian.org if you want to find out more about that or to get your tickets. Don't forget, too, you can also get free shuttle service from the Zeitarian Garage, actually from the DeMello International Center parking lot over to Cisco and back. So, as you know, here on the program, we have our segment that is brought to you by South Coast Health, the Community Spotlight, where we shine a spotlight on some of the great organizations on the South Coast that are doing amazing work. And it's time to put that spotlight on another very important organization right now. We are joined now by Laura Stone, the co-executive director of the Children's Advocacy Center of Bristol County. Good morning, Laura. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
And I think, you know, when people hear children's advocacy, we like to think that everybody wants to be a voice for children. Everybody wants to advocate for things that children need, but it doesn't always work out that way, unfortunately.
It doesn't. And for us, we certainly take our role as being Bristol County's response to the difficult things that happen to kiddos. So we are the region's response to child sexual abuse, physical abuse, and witness to violence. We do the investigative side of things. We help children heal from trauma, and we educate the community. And that looks like a variety of different things. We can talk more about that. So three different prongs of the fork, and we're proud to do it and super committed to making sure that children and families have what they need in Bristol County.
I think a lot of folks would assume, yes, law enforcement comes in and they handle some of these situations, but it goes beyond that. It's not just about, you know, justice. It's also about the lingering effects and helping kids overcome that trauma.
Absolutely. So the CAC model is actually a national model. We're one of 900 across the country. We are one of 12 in Massachusetts. And the origins of the investigative side of child sexual abuse and physical abuse is that kids who were going in to meet with police or a district attorney's office were often having to tell their story over and over again. And that, you can imagine, is re-traumatizing for them. So this model came about so that our professionals investigating child sexual abuse could come together in what we now call a multidisciplinary team. They are all sitting around a conference room table watching the interview take place in one room while the trained forensic interviewer who has special skills and training for that is in a separate room. And that is being videotaped. That videotape needs to hold up in court. And our forensic interviewers at the CAC in Bristol County are often taking questions on their smartwatch from a detective, from the nurse, from a family advocate, from the DCF social worker who's in that separate room so that we don't have to put that child through a difficult time.
And in doing that, you know, you also get to be that voice for the child with those individuals as well. So I'm sure that there's some, you know, some finesse. They're going to send you a question that they need from a legal perspective, and you're the one that's going to be kind of translating it into a way that the child can understand and can process.
Absolutely. So for us, we partner with the district attorney's office. Both our forensic interviewers are specially trained. They work for the DA, and their training has them be able to take in a whole host of different questions and ask it in a way that's non-leading, investigative, and can hold up in court.
And so I'd like to think that, you know, this is a I would love to say that someday I would hope that your organization doesn't need to exist at all. But we know that that's not the case. What are we seeing out there in the general public in terms of the way that people are kind of processed? Because we hear a lot about child sexual abuse when these convictions happen, but we don't necessarily have a grasp, I think, as a society of how to prevent these things as they're happening, how to keep an eye out, how to know when these things are happening within our own families or within our circle of friends.
Yes. So we often say, how great would it be if we prevented ourselves right out of the need for a children's advocacy center? However, we know that bad things still happen. So our three focus areas for our mission are to do that investigative work, to help kids heal who've experienced trauma. So we have five clinicians on site at the CAC who take referrals through the forensic interview process and for other kids who've experienced trauma. And then the third that you're asking about is, how do we educate? How do we make sure that detectives and DCF social workers and school adjustment counselors and nurses and teachers have what they need? What are the signs of abuse? How do you file properly? How do you call the 1-800 number and make a referral and feel comfortable doing that? And then the biggest piece that we've noticed in the changes in our society is the invent of the smartphone. So we do a lot of work now with youth in large-scale auditorium-style sessions to going into every health class in the 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, or even in high school now to educate about the invent of the cell phone, how dangerous people are finding kids online, reaching out to them, making connections with them, and how to have kids understand online digital responsibility and what to do and how to protect themselves.
Because unfortunately, it's not just a matter of, you know, a 45-year-old man reaches out to a kid. It's that they're often pretending to be other kids, and they're often trying to fool them into thinking that they're a peer.
Absolutely. So for any parents that are listening to this interview, we want to say there are a couple of new things that people don't realize. So oftentimes, we've got imposters, if you will, pretending to be younger, coming into video games like a Fortnite or Roblox and saying, hey, I'll take you to the next level in the game if you do these things or send me these images of yourself. Very dangerous kinds of things that we certainly want parents to know about. And oftentimes it's too late and they didn't know that that was happening. And the other thing are vault apps. So you allow your kiddo to have a phone, you feel comfortable, you feel confident about the things you're saying yay or nay to, and suddenly there's a Vault app, and it's a calculator that looks like a calculator when you hold your phone up, but when you click on it, it's actually a place to store photos, store conversations. It's not really a calculator at all. So those Vault apps exist, and it's frustrating because they exist because someone's marketing them, mm-hmm. and we want to be sure that kids are safe. And so we're doing a lot of combating the digital responsibility needs, doing parent-teacher nights, doing education for teachers about how to send things home in that digital backpack that are safe and that are educating the parent community about what their kids are involved with. So we'd like to say that we're sort of on the cutting edge of trying to do this work and that our educators and coordinators are doing the behind-the-scenes research that's allowing us to meet that need.
I was going to say, you've got to keep ahead of the technology that the kids are using, but also, you know, I'm sure you're also looking at what seems like innocuous apps and figuring out, are there ways that this can be used as almost like a Trojan horse to cause some of these issues?
Absolutely. And so our staff is trying to be hip, trying to be on top of things, trying to create and establish and market our trainings in a way that kids are going to actually listen. And we've been having some fun with trying to figure that out. And we have a lot of speakers and third-party presenters that we bring in to do that work with us. So it's been part of our own education. We never would have said that we'd become the experts in the region about digital responsibility, but it's a big piece of what we're noticing in terms of exploitation cases and child abuse cases is they're going on and doing that exploitation online.
Yeah, because, you know, when I was growing up, you just had to tell the kid, hey, don't go with strangers and, you know, don't go to places that you're not supposed to be alone. But now you never know how they're getting access to these kids. Do you find that the kids who do go through this and that you have to work with, you mentioned the healing, do they become distrustful of social media and of some of these apps? Or is it that they understand from the outset that, hey, listen, having all this access to technology is great, and sometimes some bad things may happen?
Yeah, I think that there's a balance. I mean, I think that technology is here to stay, and it's embedded in education practices and the way that teaching is happening. Oftentimes, particularly when kids move on and go to college, a lot of their textbooks are online versions. So we know that it's here to stay, but we try to do the work of making sure to balance that what they're experiencing, that there are choices that they can make, that there's agency that they can have around their own body and the way that they protect themselves. So I think it's just always trying to strike that balance and know that they need it. We say that, you know, your cell phone can help you do your homework. You can create a Quizlet. You can start a dance party. You can do all the positive, wonderful things with your cell phone. And then certainly it can be a difficult place, and people can solicit things. And with just a click of a button, you can make a mistake. For example, sexting is a crime. And oftentimes when we go into high schools and we're talking about the age of consent and different information about digital images, it's a crime, and you cannot forward those images to anyone. So oftentimes kids don't know that. So we're doing, you know, we're really sort of tackling a difficult issue and helping schools to monitor that as well.
They don't realize that just because you're 15 too doesn't mean that it's, you know, it's not a crime. And I would think too that having all of this kind of digital footprint for things though does make it easier to find these suspects and to bring them to justice when these situations do occur.
Yeah, we've been doing some great work with national experts, regional experts around digital images and crime, and how to find that digital footprint. Like on Snapchat, you can see where folks are. We're doing a lot of teaching kids about making sure they turn off their privacy settings so you're not always broadcasting. Or if you post, you don't post that it's happening right now. You post after so that you can stay safe and you can, you're not followed or stalked in that manner. So just always trying to be on the cutting edge of that and trying to be as informative as possible.
I mean, it's kind of sad that we have to teach kids in this way, but it's better for them overall because these are also not just things that help keep kids safe. They'll help keep them safe as adults as well.
That is, you are right on. And again, oftentimes now we find with going in to do the workshops that we're doing, folks that are a little bit older that may not know about the newest apps or don't have Snapchat and aren't going to say that, it makes me laugh. My son, his teacher used to say, "Don't Insta Snap face chat me."
And like that's Bill Belichick,
exactly.
I don't have Snap Face.
I don't have Snap Face. I don't have all those apps. So, but the kids do. And from an exploitation standpoint, since we do a lot of trafficking and exploitation cases in Bristol, last year's numbers were about 200 cases in this region alone. And I think sometimes people think that's in Boston, that's in New York, that's in Atlanta, that's not here in Bristol. But it is. It's here in Bristol County, and it's. And some of that exploitation looks like online pursuit. So we just try and be as informative and do the kind of training that can reach youth and also reach our professionals, like our detectives in different departments. And we'll bring in anyone that can help train so that we're really addressing that footprint from a digital imaging standpoint.
So looking at that data, would you say that our area has an epidemic of this happening, or is that kind of average for what happens in other parts of the country? We're just really good at being able to track them down and hold them accountable for it.
So nationally, the trend has increased for online child sexual abuse material. They call it CSEC, which is child commercial sexual exploitation of children. So our region does have a higher percentage of cases than others in Massachusetts, not as high as Suffolk County, which is in and around the Boston area. We also have a person who's dedicated to this work. And then we also in this region 2 years ago did some intensive work around missing youth in this region and making sure that those missing children did not become exploited. Because our hypothesis is that if kids go missing from care, either DCF custody or they just go missing from their parents' home, that they are much more at risk of being harmed or exploited while they're missing and they don't have a place to stay. Kids who don't have a place to stay are doing things like exchanging money, sexual favors, explicit images in order to have a roof over their heads. And they might trade it for new sneakers or, again, money, rent, food. And we want to avoid that. And we want to be on top of that. And we want to make the difference of finding those kids before it becomes a problem. So we actually have hired a staff person whose sole focus is to help us uncover and find those missing youth. And we team those cases like we team an exploitation case as a preventative, intensive, quick way of making sure that those kids stay safe.
And then you had mentioned healing. Just give us an idea of what the process is like when a child has gone through some of this and the services that you can offer to them.
Absolutely. So Bristol County, again, most CACs were founded around the prosecution and investigative side of things. And then we were so excited and we're very grateful that we were able to get some funding at the federal and state level to fund clinicians whose sole purpose is to support kids who've experienced trauma. So we have five clinicians on site at the CAC. Our work directly supports those kids who come through for a forensic interview. They can be, instead of being put on a community-based wait list for months at a time, and we know nationally that there's an epidemic of not having enough mental health clinicians able to meet the need that we're seeing. We knew that we wanted to offer those services in-house so they could be referred immediately. And we have clinicians who've been through a number of different modalities, one in particular that addresses the PTSD nature of immediate trauma after abuse. We also know that not every child discloses that they've been harmed right after it happens. Sometimes they keep it to themselves and they're sort of waiting for a safe adult or something triggers them and then they share what's occurred. So we just make sure that we have an array of services available, different modalities. We have some folks who have been EMDR trained. We have a on-site therapist who's trauma yoga informed and has gone in, and we've partnered with different school districts around her work. Again, we'll meet a child where they are, and many of the modalities that we work with are engaging the parents in the healing process with the child, so parent or caregiver, and it's made an enormous difference. So to have five clinicians on site and to be able to support hundreds of children annually, it makes all the difference.
So how can people reach out if they want to find out more about your services or find out more about how they can help and maybe help support your work?
Absolutely. So if anyone listening wants to be in touch with us, you can go on site to our website at www.cacofbc.org. And it's all those first initials of Children's Advocacy Center of Bristol County. So cacofbc.org. The other thing I'll say is if anyone listening ever has a concern or wants to speak with any of our staff about what's happening, or you want to file a 51A of abuse or neglect of a child, there's always a hotline that's open 24 hours a day, and that's the Massachusetts DCF hotline. And I can share that number now.
Please.
800-792-5200. So again, that's the Massachusetts hotline for filing a case of abuse, 800-792-5200.
All right. Thank you, Laura, so much for joining us and for all the work that you do. I know it can't be an easy job to do, But thank you for doing the work and for the staff over there for what you all do.
Absolutely. So let me just acknowledge that we are a staff of 20. We have a partnership with the District Attorney's Office and the Department of Public Health. We are so proud of the work that we do. It's a partnership through and through, and our team is amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll get the news with Mike and then more with you, 508-996-0500. We will be right back.
New York and New Jersey gearing up for more traffic this summer. Retail sales fall last month, and say goodbye to artificial food dyes.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey says travelers using JFK International Airport this summer should anticipate heavy traffic and congestion. Director Rick Cotton expecting a record 18.3 million passengers to use the airport this summer.
This summer, we anticipate more than $200 million of construction activity every single month.
The Port Authority is urging drivers to use mass transit and the JFK AirTran to get to the airport. They're also telling drivers to allow extra travel time because of new traffic patterns. Cotton apologizing for the inconvenience, but says plans to build a new JFK that will be world-class and top quality. And he believes once the new terminals and roadways are unveiled next year, travelers will agree that it's worth the wait. General Mills says it's removing artificial colors from all of its U.S. products. The maker of Cheerios says it will remove the colors from its entire portfolio by the end of 2027. Synthetic food dye in cereals and food sold in schools will be removed by next summer. The announcement comes as Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been pushing the food industry to move away from using artificial dyes. Heinz also announced yesterday they will be removing synthetic dyes from their products as well. Retail sales fell sharply in May as consumers pulled back on spending. The Commerce Department says sales dropped nearly 1% last month. The decline follows a tenth of a percent dip in April. The declining gas and auto sales also leading the drop. The data comes as Federal Reserve officials began a two-day policy meeting ahead of today's announcement on interest rates. A new study suggests adding more fruits and vegetables to your diet could help you get some more quality sleep.
Researchers from the University of Chicago and Columbia University found that eating more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains could help you get better sleep. The study's co-authors say adjusting your diet could be a new and cost-friendly way to get better sleep. The study is one of the first to show what you eat during the day could change your sleep that same night. Researchers estimate that eating the recommended 5 cups of fruits and vegetables a day could improve sleep by some 16%. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
The CEO and founder of MyPillow is being found liable for defamation and must pay millions in damages. That's the ruling from a federal jury on Monday after Mike Lindell claimed Dominion voting systems and an executive rigged the 2020 presidential election. The jury ruled that Lindell and his media company, Frank Speech, must pay Eric Coomer more than $2 million in damages. The Beatles, The Next Generation, they're coming out with a new song.
Never made my point, yeah.
John Lennon's son Sean Lennon and Paul McCartney's son James McCartney joined with Ringo Starr's son Zach Starkey's band Mantra of the Cosmos. Starkey teased their collaboration ripoff over the weekend on Instagram. I'm Michael Kastner.
Elon Musk is suing the state of New York over its new hate speech law.
The Stop Hiding Hate Act, which became law last December, requires social media companies to disclose how they handle hate speech, racism, extremism, and disinformation. Musk, who owns X, formerly known as Twitter, filed suit in Manhattan federal court on Tuesday, claiming the act is a violation of state and federal laws guaranteeing free speech. The law goes into effect this week, with Musk hoping the court will block New York from enforcing it. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
Chef and host on the Food Network, Ann Burrell, has died at the age of 55. The news was announced by the network, who says she died yesterday morning in her New York home. Burrell hosted Worst Cooks in America and also appeared on several other network shows dating back to 2005.
WBSM Sports.
Red Sox lost to the Mariners in Seattle last night, 8-0. Those two teams back at it at 4:10 this afternoon.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
Waking up to temperatures in the low and mid-60s in the South Coast this morning. Some patchy fog still around. The clouds still stubborn and even a couple of showers, too. So take it easy behind the wheel. Later this afternoon, things look a little bit better. We're in the mid and upper 70s as you head inland, right down to the coast, right as you get into the water. Temperatures hang around 70 degrees. Not too bad for this time of year, just a little bit shy of average. We are going to see the clouds stay pretty stubborn throughout the day, but the rest of the afternoon and evening should be a little bit drier. Still a stray shower or two, but that's about it. Now, Thursday is going to be more active with more heat and humidity as well. I'm ABC 6 Chief Meteorologist Christina Schallhoop on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station WBSM and get breaking news alerts and all of our content on the WBSM app. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
Welcome back in. 508-996-0500. You know, people used to criticize Sting and say he couldn't really write deep lyrics because a lot of the Police music just kind of was repetitive stuff. But that's because they had like a reggae sound and that involves a lot of repetitive things. But Sting is a former English teacher. I mean, the man is a writer. And certainly that song, All This Time, has some really great imaging and imagery in it. So I think that is a pretty fantastic example of Sting's songwriting ability and inspired by the death of his father too. So just a couple of things. First of all, don't let the weather deter you. It's going to clear up later on. So if you're heading out to the Raise the Roof party for the Zeitarian at Cisco Brewers tonight, you should have nice weather for that. More information and tickets at Zeitarian.org. But if you're also thinking about grilling dinner, because it is going to be warm and muggy, well, don't let that deter you either, because it'll be a nice night to go out and throw some steaks on the grill or anything else that you can get at the butcher shop, located at 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford, where you can get fresh, cut the way you want it meat, so that you don't have to worry about, you know, how long has it been sitting in the styrofoam and plastic in the supermarket. You don't have to worry about whether or not you know if it's going to have any flavor. Everything at the butcher shop is flavorful, and they can even season and sauce stuff up for you, marinate it for you. But also what you know is that you're supporting a local business, family-owned and operated for over 30 years by the Pinaretta family. And when you walk into the butcher shop, I always say it, but it's the truth, it feels like an old school neighborhood market. A little bit of everything that you need, from steak to soccer balls. And don't forget, too, they also have great pre-made food, so you can get yourself a nice hot lunch on a damp day. The butcher shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. And speaking of food, hot off the presses, story just published at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. One of the South Coast's most iconic restaurants has been sold after hitting the market in February for $1.3 million. Vell's Family Restaurant and Lounge in West Wareham has been sold. The new owner is Robert Harriman Jr. He is the owner of Cornerstone's Pizza and Pub in Carver. Anybody who has followed the South Shore bar pizza craze. I shouldn't really call it a craze because it's been something that for, you know, 70 years people have been into, but it became a thing in recent years online and on social media. And if you've been part of that, you know that Cornerstones is one of the South Coast area's premier bar pizza places. Well, Harriman owns Cornerstones, and now he is going to be rebranding Vell's as Seastones. C, the letter C dash Stones, Seastones Tavern. And the plan is to offer all of the original Vell's recipes plus some new things as well. So that's what he told Wareham Week. You can read more about it at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. But so the idea here in the Bump family, I spoke to Judy Bump when the restaurant went up for sale, and she said that, you know, they wanted somebody that was going to continue on with Vell's, kind of the way that they did things at Vell's, but understanding, of course, somebody's going to want to come in and put their own stamp on it, probably put their own name on it. But that the idea was that, you know, the recipes that people liked and hopefully the staff that people liked would endure. So we'll keep you up to date on everything involved with that, but should be, you know, the next generation of keeping that restaurant and its recipes going. Some of the best food around. So you can read more about that at WBSM.com and on the app. We also were talking about those Plymouth restaurants, the town no longer subsidizing them to have the little bump outs there to be able to have outdoor dining, that now restaurants have to pay for it on their own if they want those little curblets there. So now it is basically doubled what they were paying last year, and the restaurants, nobody is actually looking to do it now. Nobody has put in applications for outdoor dining. There was one restaurant that had, but in the time since, the restaurant is closed. So none of the active and open restaurants are seeking outdoor dining, and I think that that might be, and this is just my guess, a show of solidarity among them that, you know, if this is something that brings people into town, then we want to band together and make sure that the town isn't gouging us for this. You can read more about that at the Plymouth Independent website. That is, that's their version of New Bedford Light, their nonprofit independent news source. Let me take a break here, and we'll be back in a few moments. And welcome back in. 508-996-0500, app chat and open line voicemails on the WBSM app if you would like to get your voice heard. And stay tuned, of course, for South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. It is Wednesday, so midweek with the mayor. And we'll get an update on the police search and I'm sure all kinds of other things with the mayor. Chris McCarthy's on his way into the studio now for South Coast Now. So you're going to want to tune in for that. And, of course, tomorrow will be our brain freeze question of the day as part of the Gen X file. So your chance to win a free porch sampler from McGraw's Back Porch Ice Cream in Fairhaven. And then don't forget, too, Friday will be Fun Friday. It's hard to believe, but we're already halfway to Friday, right? The week is just flying by. So although once the weather turns and it gets much hotter and muggier, you might feel like it's dragging on a little bit. But 508-996-0500 if you want to chime in the time that we have left. So we covered a lot of ground this morning. We talked about, going back to the New Bedford schools, banning the cell phones. Now Rhode Island is looking at doing it across the entire state. But I was asking the question, okay, but what about when a kid comes in with a smart watch or these days smart glasses? So are those devices going to be taken away as well? Because that'll still allow them to access the device itself remotely. Then also we were talking about the Plymouth restaurants, these curblets they call them, where they have the outdoor dining. Plymouth is no longer going to be subsidizing the cost of those. So now basically the cost to have one, whether you are reapplying or whether you are a first-time applicant, has basically doubled. And now no restaurants are actually looking to get them. So have they effectively killed outdoor dining on Main Street? See, the restaurants on Water Street, right there on the ocean, they have like built-in outdoor dining already because they've built these patios and decks as part of their restaurant's footprint. But for those Main Street restaurants, they don't really have that opportunity. You know, they're nestled amongst all these buildings and in these historic buildings. So this was their only chance to kind of compete with that same atmosphere that Water Street can provide. And now they've got to spend more money out of their pockets. And then speaking of restaurant news, we just were telling you that Vell's in West Wareham has sold, that the new owner is Robert Harriman Jr. of Cornerstones Pizza and Pub in Carver, and that he's going to be renaming Vell's as Seastones Tavern. The letter C dash Stones Tavern. And that he says he's going to be keeping a lot of the same recipes from Vell's that people know and love. So, and Vell's already was known for its pizza. But I think if you're going to add in some of that Cornerstone, you know, flair for the pizza, especially becoming known as one of the South Shore bar pizza spots, that can only be a good thing. And we'll give them even more competition with Charlie's Place in Wareham on the other side of town, which was started by the sons of the man who claims to have invented South Shore Bar Pizza. So maybe South Shore Bar Pizza's South Coast branch, the wars are heating up with that. I'm, of course, being a friendly rivalry, I am sure. 508-996-0500 in the final moments here. Also, the final 3 days of our Cyndi Lauper ticket giveaway to see her final show in Massachusetts, at least unless they add anything on to this final leg of her farewell tour. But this could be the, and probably is your last chance to ever see Cyndi Lauper in concert. It's happening July 17th at Xfinity Center. And we've got tickets to give away all this week. Three remaining pairs. Thanks to Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven, the home of the Purple Dot, where you can try before you buy. And if you are the lucky winner, one of the lucky winners, well, maybe I'll see you there because I'll be at that show, which is why I won't be at 50s night. Also the same night, July 17th. And we've still got some spots open. If you would like to sponsor 50s night here on WBSM, we've already got some great sponsors lined up, but we have a few more spots open. If you want to take part in what is the biggest broadcast of the year for the station, the most listened to night guaranteed the entire year, is 50s night, with people tuning in from all over and listening from 3 to midnight when we're playing all that 50s music. So you could reach the most captive audience that we can give you all year long on 50s night. And reach out to me, Tim at WBSM.com, if you want to get involved, and we'll hook you up with the salespeople, and we will make sure that you can be part of the 50s night fun here on the radio. You know, getting involved with the stuff downtown, that's a whole different thing. I'm talking just about the big radio broadcast we do of all 50s music. I mean, somebody's going to pay for that, right? So if you want to help out, Tim at WBSM.com. Let me take my final break of the morning, and we'll be back in a few. And make your day easier, you know? Don't run out in the rain and spend all day out there doing your laundry and, you know, having to go back to the laundromat to move it into the dryer and then go back to fold and put it all away. No, just drop it off at Dash Laundromat. You don't even have to go inside. You can use their lockers outside. And right now, wash, dry, fold service at Dash Laundromat is just $1 a pound for the summer to help celebrate the opening of their new location in the south end of New Bedford on Rodney French Boulevard across from Kilburn Mill and the old Advance Auto Parts.